Good morning. Good to be with you this morning. Hopefully you had a wonderful holiday weekend, spending time with family and friends as we did. It's always a joy this time of year to be with those who we're close with and to think of all the blessings that we have. I appreciate John's work this morning, leading us in songs to remind us even more about that, the gratefulness that we should have to God for all the things that we have been given in this life. If you will be turning your attention to Matthew, the 7th chapter, I want to begin reading there in just a moment. If you're visiting with us, we're so glad that you have come our way. If you have any questions about what we're doing this morning, why we are doing what we are doing, please feel free to ask. You can ask me. There'll be elders stationed at the back doors as we close this morning. You can ask them questions that you may have. We're just glad that you are here with us. Please fill out a visitor's form in those blue packets at the corners of the buildings as well. We want to have a record of your attendance. We'd like to get to know you better. Thank you for being here. Let's begin reading in Matthew chapter 7 in verse 15. Matthew 7 in verse 15. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You'll recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a diseased tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will recognize them by their fruits. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name? And then I will proclaim to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. Kind of a scary text. That as Jesus is addressing the crowds, as they're listening to him speak, he's talking about people who are fairly religious. People who are calling out to him. People who are saying they were prophesying to him. They were casting out demons. They're doing all these mighty works in his name. But at the end of this story, he says, I tell them to depart. I don't know them. Just preceding this, he talks about the false prophets. And he says the way that you know them is by their fruits, what they bear, and what their life shows you about who they are. So this morning I want to talk some about counterfeit Christianity. The idea of there being those who might call out to the Lord or want to act like they are religious, but yet in reality they're still living for themselves. Because that is the idea of what's going on here in Matthew 7, the false prophets, those who use religion to their own gain. And really that's the idea behind the concept of being a counterfeit, right? It's that we want something for nothing. That's why people will print up the bills and they'll go places and they'll try to buy things. They're trying to get something without any sacrifice, without giving anything. They want something in return. And so that's the concept of counterfeit Christianity, that it is a kind of life where there are benefits that are desired, but there's not really much sacrifice that is given. And that can be a real danger. I think if you're anything like me, you've felt that in your life. Or as you analyze or you go through some self-examination, you realize that there have been up times in your life. There have been down times. Sometimes you really wonder if you're truly committed. Other times you feel like you are really devout. And so in some senses, this is not the idea that you have someone who's just counterfeit all the time. They show up here and they just put on a face and just all the time they're a hypocrite, although that can happen. But maybe it's more so the idea that from time to time, I really need to go through some self-examination to make sure I'm not living counterfeit at that moment, that I'm not really being fake. That's what Jesus is getting at here. It's what he gets at with the Pharisees and the Sadducees. That's why he tells them in Matthew 23, a text we looked at last week, that they're like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanness. They were counterfeit. They were fake. After my first summer in college, I went home to Vermont where my parents were living at the time, and I worked at a credit union. A really good job. I learned a lot of good things doing that job for that summer. But part of what that was an internship. So it wasn't just about me coming there and working a job. They were trying to teach us some things. And so we had a pretty extensive training period before we actually went out into the credit union to do any kind of work. And one of the things that they worked on us with was counterfeiting. trying to identify counterfeit bills and the various ways in which people try to counterfeit and how we can figure out whether or not a bill is counterfeit or not. It's just a huge problem. One in every 10,000 bills is a counterfeit bill. Probably many of us have encountered them and not even known it. And they're very hard to identify. This is shown by the reality that the United States Mint has to keep changing things or adding things. They have to keep shifting their security because counterfeiters are so good at what they do that they keep getting through some of these security measures. So we have to keep changing them and try to make it harder and harder for them. And so there are various ways in which we were taught. There's watermarks, there's the sharpness of the images. Really, it comes down to the feel, though. And many of you who are aware of this or have done this in your life, you realize sometimes it's just you kind of get a feeling that something's not right. We understand this in life in general, but this is very true with counterfeit bills, that as you're flipping through bills, something just doesn't feel right. And then you kind of go to the other measures, the watermarks, or maybe the starch marker, or something, and try to figure out if it's really not authentic. And that's the scary thing about counterfeiting. It's so easy, if you put the work in, to make it look real. And so what we have when we're talking about counterfeit Christianity is that this is really a problem of identity. It's a problem of who I really am. What image am I truly bearing in my life? I want to talk a little bit about counterfeiting this morning, both with bills, although that's not really my focus, but more so with what it means to be a counterfeit Christian and what this is like in our life. And we can apply some of the ideas that happen with our monetary system to see how this works in our life. And there are a lot of ways, as I mentioned, to see whether a bill is counterfeit. One of them is to see the image on the bill itself. And when you look at that bill, if it's not real, it's very dull. And so I would suggest to you this morning that counterfeit Christians portray a dull image of Christ that allows them to blend into their surroundings. I'm just going to call this chameleon Christianity. They're just able to blend in and out. They're able to do just enough so that people will kind of leave them alone. They won't question the sort of things that they're doing in life. Maybe they'll kind of walk on the borderline. Some things they might not quite be acceptable, but it's not so bad that anybody's going to say anything about it. And then they can kind of blend into their surroundings when they're around people who really are righteous. At the same time, they can also blend into the world when they're with their friends in the world. The image on these counterfeit bills, they're flat. They have no character. They have no texture. They don't stand out at all, and that's the problem with chameleon Christianity. When you look at the difference between what is real and what is fake, you can see the definition on the real one. You can see the texture in it. You can see how it stands out from the rest of the bill. And the reality is, in chameleon Christianity, that just doesn't happen. It's the person who comes once a week or shows up just enough in the assembly so that no one's going to really say anything about it, but they don't really stand out in their life. Maybe if someone mentions something to them, they'll come a little bit more so that they'll be noticed. But really, there's not much of a commitment there to it. It's just something that is done occasionally. They're not really going to participate much in the group activities that happen. And they're not going to be around their Christian family a whole lot in people's homes. And they'll do it some, but not really enough to make it matter in their life. What is your goal? That's what I want to ask this morning. What is your goal as a Christian? Are you serious about your Christianity? That's what we have to ask ourselves. Am I serious about my devotion to Christ? Am I serious about what He has told me in Scripture about what is necessary to be in Christ? Because that involves things like serious participation with God's people. It involves things like commitment to worship, encouraging and uplifting one another, being built up by each other's presence. It involves sometimes things that are difficult, like rebuke, admonition. That's real Christianity. That's Christianity that's textured, that has character, and that's going to stand out, that's going to be different. It's not just something that kind of comes in and out and doesn't have much substance to it. That is counterfeit Christianity. Counterfeit Christianity is the kind of Christianity that just kind of shows up here and there, but it really doesn't have much character to it at all.
It's feel-good Christianity. It is one wanting some kind of benefit without giving any kind of sacrifice. But that's what counterfeiting really is. And as I mentioned before, this might not really be the idea that we have bad motivations, or that we're just trying to be counterfeit in our life, that we're just trying to be two-faced, and we just come here and we put on a front and make everyone think that we're holy and righteous, and then we go out in our life and do whatever we want. And that might not be how this is lived out for most of us, but it might just be that Christianity is difficult sometimes. Sometimes it's hard, and I don't want to analyze myself well enough to make sure I'm legit. That maybe I just want to play both sides of the coin. At one moment, I want to get that coin that has God's picture on it, his image. But then when it's not easy, but when it's not the way that's the most effective in life, in the world, I'll kind of flip the coin and be like the world and do things the world's way. That's easy to do. Can we all admit that we've all felt that at some point? That at some point in our life, it's been easier to go with the flow, to go with the crowd, to do what the friends are doing at school, or do what's happening in the workplace and not stand out and be different, not have the character that we need to bear the image of Christ. Which image? Whose image? What image am I going to bear in my life? That's what we have to ask when we're talking about counterfeiting. Because it's very easy to put on a front and put on the picture, the portrayal of Jesus, but it's just a dull image. That can be a very easy sort of thing to do, to say, yes, I'm a Christian, and to receive the benefits from that, and to walk with the people who make that statement. But when it comes down to true commitment and true faith, where are we going to stand? When there's sacrifice to be given, when there's suffering to be had, that's the mark of what true Christianity is. When it's truly authentic in our life, when it really means something to us, that we're willing to give something up for it. And not simply looking for a benefit without any sacrifice. Jesus tells us in Luke 14 that we have to bear our cross. We have to take up our cross and follow after him. In fact, he says you have to hate father and mother and even your own self more than me. That's true sacrifice. That's authentic Christianity. In 1 John, John tells us we can't love the world. We can't love the things of the world. We can't go after the things of the world because that's not true Christianity. That's not what it means to be an authentic Christian. And yet it's hard sometimes, isn't it? Sometimes we want to do what's right. We have the desire even to do what's right. But then on the other side of that, it's so easy to want to be like the world. And so that's the reason for the exhortation this morning. That's the reason we're talking about this and thinking about it. All of us, that this is a temptation that we face on a regular basis because we live in a world that doesn't want Jesus. But we live in a world that doesn't really want God. And you see that by the things that are happening around us. And so when we get into that world, it can be very tempting to step back, to just assimilate into what's around us, to blend into the surroundings. But what that is counterfeit Christianity. It's not the real thing. And if that's what we're doing, and if that's what we're committed to in our life, living part of it for God and then part of it for the world, we're really not truly devoted to God. We are just counterfeits. We're fake. We're dull. We're flat. We have no character. We have no texture in our life. And we're just wanting something for nothing. Another aspect of a counterfeit bill is that it just has no substance below the surface. And what we need to understand about counterfeit Christianity is that its quality is only skin deep. That the quality of counterfeit Christianity is just superficial. There's really not much there. And that's what happens with counterfeit bills. You look at them, and one technique is to bleach out a $5 bill. And some of these may be even outdated at this point because things change so quickly, as I stated before. But this is one method, that you bleach out a $5 bill and then you reprint a $100 bill on there. And so you can hold it up there and you see the watermark. And Benjamin Franklin's on the front prominently, this $100 bill. But then beneath the surface and the watermark, when you really examine and you look deep, you see Abraham Lincoln. Let me ask you, whose image are you bearing? Are we bearing our own image beneath the surface? Or when people look at us, do they really see that the Christian of Ephesians 4:24, that we've put on the new self, created after the likeness of God and true holiness and righteousness, that there's really been a change, there's really been a transformation in our life, and that they see the front of us, they see the facade that we have, and we think that's a Christian, and that's someone living for God, but then they can dig in, they can look beneath the surface, and they also see Christ living in us. Is that the way we describe our lives? That's a question we have to ask. Are we real? Are we a true, authentic Christian, or are we living a fake life? Sometimes we want to present ourselves like that $100 bill, don't we? We want to put on this presence that we have great value in our religion, and that we put a lot of stock in God and Jesus, that we truly want to be righteous and holy, but then we know we're more like that bleached out $5 bill beneath the surface. And it's in those moments that we need to realize we need to be committed to changing. We're going to have these fluctuations up and down, just like the prophet Elijah, just like David, just like Abraham, where we have moments of great faith and we have moments that we struggle. But what's going to mark out a true, authentic Christian is when they see that, they're going to make changes. They don't want to be that $5 bill beneath the surface. And so that when that begins to emerge, they see that in their life and they want to change. They want to be real. And the truth is, this is motivated by elevating self. That's really what sin is. It is an affront to God. We want to do our own will. We want to have our own image be what is most important to us. We want to fulfill our own desires rather than the desire of God and His will. We have Jesus as an example of how this ought to work. Peter talks about this in 1 Peter chapter 4. He says, "Since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God." That's where it is right there. He says, you don't live for your human desires, your human passions. You die to self, and you live for the will of God. For the time that has passed suffices for doing what the Gentiles or the pagans want to do, living in sensuality and passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery, and they malign you. But they will give account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. To be an authentic Christian, to be a true Christian, it's going to take some sacrifice. It's going to take some suffering. If we're going to live after the image of Jesus, that's what Peter's saying, to arm ourselves with this same way of thinking that Jesus suffered in the flesh. He was willing to be obedient even to the point of death. And so those who are going to follow him, they're going to have to face some suffering in life. There's going to be some difficulty. People are going to mock. Isn't that what he talks about here in 1 Peter 4? That the way of Christianity is going to be lived very differently than the way of the world. And so when we do that, the world is going to notice. They're going to see that something is different, and they're going to say something about it. They're going to criticize, and they're going to mock. They're going to make fun of. But Peter says this is just the nature of Christianity. This is what it looks like to follow Jesus Christ. And so authentic Christianity is Christianity that is sincere, that is willing to make these changes. It is not a Christianity that's only skin deep, that's only superficial. It's not a Christianity that's willing to blend into its surroundings and to just go with the flow and feel out the environment and kind of live to that effect. It's not what true Christianity is. Being authentic and real, it's going to cost us some things. It might cost us some things with our peers, as Peter talks about here. He says they're going to malign you. They're going to speak evil of you. They're going to make fun of you. Why? Because you don't take part in sensuality, in drunkenness, in orgies, in drinking parties, in lawless idolatry. Here's what Peter's saying here. These are the marks of the world. This is what the world does. They party. And they drink. They have orgies. They participate in immorality. This is the way the world thinks. And when you don't live that way, when you are authentic, when you are real, they're going to malign you for it. So we have to sacrifice some things to be a real Christian. We have to say, no, I can't go to that party. You might have to say, I just can't talk that way. I can't participate in this. I can't live like that. Or we might have to give up some things with even our family or our friends. Many of us have family who are not followers of Jesus. And sometimes there are decisions to be made along those lines. It's like, no, I can't give up these religious activities to go be a part of what you're wanting me to be a part of. I have a plan. I have a schedule. I have things that I do, things that are important to me, things that are a priority in my life. Or maybe it's just something as simple as, no, I'm not going to stop talking about Jesus around you. I'm sure some of you have faced that. Why do you always have to talk about Jesus? Why do you always have to talk about the church you're a part of? Because it's important, because it's a part of my life. It's what I believe in. It is that important to me. I'm not going to stop talking about that. Now listen, I'm not trying to tell you to be obnoxious. But the reality is it is part of who we are. And so sometimes we're going to be spoken evil of, even among our family or even among people who would call us their friends, because they don't like the way that we're living. They don't like the decisions that we have to make. The way that we do things. Maybe they don't like the way that we do our weddings. Maybe they don't like the way that we dress. Maybe they don't like all kinds of things about us because we're Christians. But you know what? That's what it means. That's what authentic Christianity is about. Is being different from the world. Standing out. Having character. When they look at us, they can see the texture. They can see there's something different about who we are. Not that we're just going to blend in and be like everybody else. And when we're willing to do that, we can have a huge impact. A huge impact on the communities that we live in and the people that we're around. Some might not like it and they'll go the other way, but then others will be attracted to the kind of life that we're living. They'll want us to do the things that we're doing. They'll see Christ living in us and they'll want that. You think of the story of Daniel. Daniel was a sincere follower of God. He was no fake. He wasn't going to project religion in his life. He wasn't just going to talk about following Yahweh when it was easy. He was still doing it when he got thrown into the lion's den. He was still willing to sacrifice. He was going to go and he was going to pray to God no matter what the law said. He didn't care what Nebuchadnezzar said. He didn't care what the rulers said. He was still going to pray to God. He was still going to practice his religion because he was authentic. He was real. And one of the major points of Daniel is that Nebuchadnezzar realized this. And he understood who the Most High God really was. There was an open door there. And we can't know exactly what happened with Nebuchadnezzar or if he really thought in a monotheistic way like Daniel and his friends did. Probably not. But he understood that Daniel's God was powerful. And he said, nobody better speak against Daniel's God. That's the kind of influence Daniel had on the people he was around because he was real, because he was authentic. Last time we talked about the Pharisees. Sunday evening sermon last week. And about the big problem that they had that Jesus points out, that they were hypocrites. They just wanted to look good on the outside, but really inside they were worthless. He said, you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but inside you are full of greed and self-indulgence. It's counterfeit religion. And so this morning as we're looking at texts like Matthew 7, and thinking about that scene, that judgment scene that Jesus is presenting for them, people are going to him saying, Lord, Lord, these are religious people. These are people claiming to be his, and yet he says, depart from me. Never knew you. And he tells his disciples, you will know them by their fruits. Our fruits are pretty important. What he says is the way they're living. You're going to know them by the way that they live, the kind of character that they have, the kind of texture they have in their life. When you feel them, you realize there's something different about them, even if you can't explain all of it. And so although we might have struggles at times and we might have ups and downs in our faith, our desire Our will should be that we're not counterfeit, we're not fake in who we are, but that we are truly sincere to God. We really want to be like Jesus, whatever that means. Whether they're suffering, whether they're sacrifice, whether I can't live the way the world lives, whether they're going to criticize me for it or mock me for it or laugh at me. But what's most important is what God says on the subject. And although man can kill the body, they have no control over the soul. And so ultimately, it doesn't matter what people think. It matters what God is going to say to me on that last day when I stand before him. And he looks at my life and he's judging my life with the things that I've done, the things that I've said. And he's bringing every work into judgment, as the text tells us multiple times is going to happen. And he can say, you're the real deal. Not because you did everything right, because you did everything you could to be like my son. And to change your life and to try to fix things even when you made mistakes and your heart was in it. And that's what true Christianity is about. It's not about honoring with the lips. That should happen. It's not just about saying the right words, although we ought to do that. It's that we've truly committed our life to him. Have you done that this morning? Whose image are you bearing? If you're still bearing your own image, that needs to change. Whether you already are claiming to be a Christian or whether you are not. If you're not bearing the image of Christ, either way, it's wrong. And if you haven't confessed your belief in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, if you haven't done that yet, you can do that now. You can come forward. You can say, I believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God. You can do what scriptures say. You can die with Christ in baptism, be raised up in newness of life, being recreated after his image. And if you're a Christian, you realize you've been living kind of a fake life. You can make it right this morning as well. You can change. You can become committed again. You can be authentic. We want that for you. Will you come now? Why don't you come as we stand and we sing together?